Welcome to episode 472 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is a show where we talk about consumer entertainment technology, and we are at the, well, they don't call it this anymore, Josh, but the Consumer Electronics Show, CES 2019 in Las Vegas.
Right. It's not an abbreviation. It just happens to be a Consumer Electronics Show.
That's right. All lowercase.
Right. All right. It is Thursday, the day that we're recording this. This show has been going on for what feels like 3.5 months.
With all the press releases, it has been.
Right. We've been here since Sunday. There were press events Sunday and Monday, and then the actual show kicked off Tuesday.
Right. So we're already pretty tired. And this is the next to last day for us, which is usually about when we would be recording this anyway, because we want to see as much as we can.
Exactly. And the last couple of years, we've started over at the convention center that has more of the smart home stuff, which is more for your show, not so much this show.
Right.
So instead, we just record the show later in the week. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, and we're here today doing something completely different. We actually have space on the show floor to record the show. Now, from this vantage point, this looks all glamorous and everything, even though we have earthquake sound behind us. I call this our freshman space.
Freshman?
Yeah, this is our freshman space.
Right.
It's literally two tables and an electrical outlet at the door.
And if we had adapters, we would have Ethernet at least.
That's true.
And then maybe we could have live streamed this. But
next year.
Not this year, but we are recording this on video. So if you're just listening to the audio version of this, go and check out our YouTube feed, because we'll probably end up uploading this video, assuming all goes well.
Yeah,
and you can see what it looks like.
You can see all of the noise going on behind us from the earthquake booth. It actually looks pretty cool. They have someone playing a game in this motion gaming rig, and it has VR and surround sound. It's insane.
I think it's iRacing, the racing simulator that I used to spend way too much time on.
Yeah, but in no way that you ever played it.
No, not on like an $8,000 motion cockpit. No.
All right, well, let's talk about video and audio and maybe a little bit of gaming.
You know, almost no gaming. So if you don't like gaming, you're going to love this show. If you don't like long shows, you might not like this episode. I have a feeling this is going to take us a little while, but it's all good stuff. So instead of bantering, maybe we should jump right into this. We're going to start with the HD Home Run?
Yeah,
let's start with HD Home Run.
That was our first meeting.
It was our first meeting. We sat down with Ted Head, the CEO of Silicon Dust, Monday morning, that was. And he had two new products for us. One is basically a product that they did tell us that they were working on last year, but lots of changes to it, and now an actual name, and actually coming to market soon. And that would be the HD Home Run Scribe Duo. It is basically one of their dual tuner over-the-air tuners, but it's also got a terabyte of storage built in, and it'll run their DVR software right on the box. So it is a one terabyte dual tuner over-the-air DVR in one box.
Yeah, network DVR, everything you need. No more do you need a computer to run this on. No more do you necessarily need external storage. Just plug it into your network, attach your antenna, and go.
Yeah, it's a great solution. It's way easier to set up for normal people. I think listeners to our show, they're more the prosumer side is what Ted called them, and I think that's probably an accurate description. You and I are comfortable setting up a NAS, and you and I have always-on computers at home.
Right.
Doesn't mean we want to use them. And lots of regular consumers don't. So I think this is a great product for getting people started with an HD Home Run DVR. And they'll be able to start on it soon. Ted said March for $199.
Yeah, now we'll get to the silicon dust date reliability a little bit later. But sure. I always hedge. This is CES.
Yeah, so, like, this isn't just a silicon dust date reliability thing.
Right,
it
this is CES, right? Everybody does this. Everybody has this problem. So what I tend to do is I try and take, like, the half of the year that they say. And if someone says it's at the end of a quarter, I'm assuming it's really going to be the next quarter. Or right. The end of the half of the year, it's going to be the next half of the year. So he's saying end of the quarter of March. Let's assume we're going to get it sometime in the first half of 2019.
Yeah.
And the reason that that's more likely than with past product announcements is because it's already in production.
Right, right. And to clarify, March is when they're planning to accept pre-orders, delivering units to customers in April.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
All right, the other product they announced is the HD Home Run Servio. It's an interesting name.
Not yeah, too many S's. That's
Scribe, a lot of S's.
Servio, I confuse these two. All week long I've been confusing these two.
This, while the Scribe Duo is definitely targeted at someone who doesn't have any HD Home Run devices, the Servio is the opposite.
Right.
If you already have an HD Home Run tuner, and maybe you're not running the DVR software at all, or maybe you are, but you're sick of running it on a computer or an NVDA Shield or a NAS, instead, the Servio is a box that looks like one of their tuners, but it doesn't have any tuners inside. It's 2 terabytes of storage, and it'll host the DVR software.
So again, it's a server. Throw it on your network. Don't need to plug your antenna in because you're already doing that with a tuner elsewhere. Adds lots of storage. You don't have to deal with the complexity of a NAS or storage on a computer somewhere. It just runs independently. It can be paired with a Scribe. It can be paired with other storage that you already have, so you don't have to abandon your legacy storage.
And well, the storage situation is a little murky right now.
It is, but I almost feel like we shouldn't get into it because I get the feeling that they're still working out the details on
right.
How do you migrate from your old storage and how do you blend the two and stuff like that. But the point is that you will be able to watch stuff from your old storage and you will be able to watch stuff from the new storage on the device.
I'm not even sure I feel comfortable saying that.
All right, well,
it is really up in the air. What I think we can definitely say for sure is you can record to these things and watch from them. They're working on dealing with migrating from old systems to new systems and stuff like that. But all of that is really up in the air at
yeah.
this point.
Okay. Fair point. $150, $149. Same timing. It's also in production.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And if you're not sure how many hours of content and stuff that is, the Scribe Duo, you're looking at 150 hours or more of HD content. The Servio, it's twice the storage, so twice the number. 300 hours of HD over-the-air recordings, and
yeah, we didn't mention this.
They can both record HD Home Run Premium TV, and because that's using H.264 compression all over the place, those files are way smaller.
Yeah.
So you can record 1,000 hours of Premium TV
on the Duo.
On the Scribe Duo, right, and 2,000 hours or more on the Servio.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's
yeah.
really, really cool stuff. So those were the two big announcements, and the whole thing kind of headed us off at the pass because really our question was, hey, how's that Prime 6 going?
Yeah, all of you, everybody wants to know, where is the HD Home Run Prime 6? And in terms of release dates, we still don't have a solid one. They're saying they are very confident it's coming out this year.
Yes. Yeah, and we've talked about this in the past, right? And I mean, for all intents and purposes, we predicted that we were not going to see it at CES this year. We were not going to see
right.
it in 2018. We knew that they had taken on the Premium TV project, which I think was very, very smart. I'm glad they did it. They've had some wrinkles there that are completely out of their control. We'll talk about that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also then put these other devices out which are really kind of driven by what the market is demanding right now. And so now they have things that are competitive to what other players are putting out there, and they can refocus on those of us who are still avid cable card users. They know we still exist. Their team is cable card users, which is why I am convinced this is absolutely going to happen. Not just because Ted vehemently, insistently, repeatedly said, this will happen. It's not a dead project.
Right. It's definitely happening. And it's weird because we were hearing angry comments from people on both sides of this. People saying, I don't know why they're even wasting their time on the Prime 6. Who cares about cable card anymore?
Right.
And then way more people going, I'm so mad. Why is this still not out? Why can't they give us a date? It's coming.
Yeah, it's coming. It's because hardware is hard. And particularly when you're dealing with licensing bodies and everything else that and approval bodies. And I am confident it will come out. It's just not when we wanted it. I want one. I will buy one as soon as it's available.
Right. Yep. All right. So the last thing from HD Home Run is what's going on with HD Home Run Premium TV.
Yeah. And we reported about this, right? That
we
they
did.
Had a problem where the provider that they use for the content was having licensing negotiation issues. It's all the Discovery networks and one or two other networks, I forget which ones, so that they've lost 9 channels, basically.
8 channels.
They've lost some channels. And as a result, they are actually reimbursing the people who are subscribing $10 a month. If you do the math, because we did, you're getting more back than you're paying per channel. So I would say ride it out. I mean, they were offering channels that other services didn't even have without a premium upgrade or even at all. So I think it's worth writing it out, and they're not the only ones that are dealing with this problem. And, you know, we talked with Ted pretty transparently about this. This problem isn't going to go away for them. They're going to continue, as will anyone else offering streaming services, and we've seen this happen with the other services, where they lose channels because licensees want to start playing hardball.
Right. Carriage disputes aren't just for cable providers and satellite operators anymore.
Right, exactly.
It's now a reality in the streaming TV space. So it's no fun for any. Nobody likes this, but it is the situation. And we can keep being mad at Silicon Dust, but there's nothing they can do about this. They're just white labeling the service from another provider. So they're working on, you know, they're bugging their providers.
Right.
But they can't do much more than bug the lawyers.
Right. Right, exactly. All right, well, let's move on. The next piece of equipment that caught your attention was the Tablo Quadro? Quadro?
Tablo Quad.
Quad.
Right. New version of their quad tuner over-the-air DVR. They already have a four tuner DVR. It's got an awkward name. The new quad fits more in line with the naming of their other DVRs. It's not drastically different, but it does have some updated hardware, upgraded gigabit Ethernet, upgraded AC Wi-Fi if you're using Wi-Fi, although you shouldn't for something like this. Plug these boxes into Ethernet always. The cooler feature here is instead of being required to hang a USB 3 hard drive off the back of one of these, it now has an internal slot for a SATA hard drive. So you can buy any 2.5-inch SATA hard drive, slide it inside of this thing, and now you've just got a single box solution.
I honestly thought the reporting on this was a little bit misleading up front. I was led to believe that it had an internal SATA drive, that it had storage in it. That's not the case.
Right. Yeah, it still doesn't come with storage.
For storage.
Right. Right. So that new box is coming in March. It's $199. You'll be able to get it soon. The other thing that's coming in March, and this is a software solution for all existing Tablo DVRs, including the new one, and that is automatic commercial skipping, a feature that we've talked about on many platforms over the years here on this podcast. They're doing it the smart way. They're not actually removing the commercials. They are detecting where the commercials are, and then when you're playing through a recorded episode, when it gets to the point where a commercial break starts, it'll just automatically jump to the end of it. And it's pretty much seamless. There's not buffering or anything like that, despite the fact that you are streaming this video. If the commercial detection isn't perfect, you can rewind because they didn't cut out the commercials.
Yeah, it's non-destructive. I love that. Very, very good stuff.
So way more details about that on the blog post on the Digital Media Zone.
Yeah, and so far, everything that we've talked about, we've been writing about while we've been out here. So you can catch up on all of this news at thedigitalmediazone.com. Now, here's something that we haven't written about, but this is more of a general theme. We're seeing a lot of Apple presence out here. And it's not all the big Apple sign that's up on the building that everybody's taking a picture of, including me. But in fact, we're seeing Apple technology integration into products here on the floor. And probably the one that caught most people's attention was announced on Monday during the Samsung press conference, where they showed and talked about iTunes on Samsung TVs. Now, this sounds way complicated. It's not that complicated.
No.
It's actually really simple and really brilliant. 2018 models, which are already out, and 2019 televisions are going to be able to play iTunes movies and TV, and you'll be able to rent and purchase through that interface. So you're basically going to have an iTunes movies and an iTunes TV shows interface available to you on the Samsung TVs. The Samsung TVs that are in 2018 models are going to get firmware upgrades to enable this, and supposedly this is all happening this year, by the end of the year.
Right, yeah, they weren't giving us time frames for the 2019 model TVs, but they did say that the firmware update for the 2018s would be in the second half of 2019.
And if they're not giving time frames for the 2019 TVs, that means they're not going to be ready the first half.
Right.
I mean, right?
Right.
All right. The other thing with Apple technology is AirPlay 2. AirPlay 2, certainly we've seen in a whole bunch of different devices, including Sonos speakers over the last couple months. And now we're getting video and music integration into TVs. Sony, Samsung, LG, Vizio, all adding this technology directly into their TVs, so you'll be able to AirPlay to your television without having to use any, like without even having to have an Apple TV connected, without having to switch your inputs. If you have AirPlay on a device, you know that the magic of it is that you just, like with casting, you AirPlay to something and it just switches the input to that automatically.
Yeah, that's was unexpected news, but I think some really great news.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One meeting that we almost didn't go to was with TiVo, because TiVo put out some press releases that were all kind of channel and corporate related, and they didn't seem to have a whole lot to do with consumers.
Right, a bunch of business-to-business deals and stuff like that. Not super exciting.
Right. They were like, all right, but we should really go. We set up an appointment. We need to. So, man, I'm glad we went, because there's a lot going on here. Some exciting stuff. Not necessarily any new big hardware, but some nice new additions to the services and products that they offer. So the first thing that you wrote about was that they're basically coming up with a software version of the TiVo Mini. And it's going to run on probably your streaming device of choice, as long as it's not a game console.
Right. Yeah, so streaming apps available on Roku and Fire TV to start.
In quarter one, they're expecting.
Right, and then Apple TV and Android TV later in the year. So no game consoles, like you said, but most of the big hitters there. And
yeah,
the interface is essentially identical to what you would get on your TiVo Mini Vox.
which is pretty much identical to what you get on your TiVo. The big difference is it's just a subset. It's just scaled down to the things that you can do. Now, they did mention that if you use these services out of your house, then you may not be able to get protected content. Well, you won't be able to get protected content depending on what your provider protects. So one of the things that we noticed that I was thinking about when I do this is that I travel with a Fire TV. I already hooked up my Fire TV to the television. And I imagine that it would be nice to watch stuff from my TiVo. I haven't done it. I haven't actually done that successfully. Because they had an old app that let me supposedly view recorded content. But this is going to let you do everything. Live, recorded, browsing, setting recordings.
Right.
Everything. So it's really powerful. I'm really happy with it. I expect that this is something that a lot of people are potentially going to use instead of buying a mini or maybe buying another TiVo in their home. And they know that, but they want to do that to help build the TiVo community.
Right. Yeah, I think this is great news. You know, we've gotten questions from our listeners saying, I use TiVo at home. I've got a vacation house. What should
exactly.
I do? Take a Roku with you.
Yeah.
Take a Fire TV with you.
Now, again, if you're provider ends up protecting everything, that may not work out as well for you.
Right, because this works for both the cable version and the OTA version of the TiVo Bolt.
So that's a really good point. If you're using OTA channels, then you're not going to have a problem with it. But
yeah.
If you're using cable card, then some channels may be problematic. Again, for that, we're only talking outside the house. Inside the house, no problem. Perfect.
Yep.
It's going to work great. Next up, we had... And I can't tell you how long people have been waiting for this. I've been hearing people complain about this for years and years and years. The TiVo Mini always requires a hard wire connection, either through Ethernet or through a MoCA connection. And it has a MoCA adapter built into it. So that's one of the nice things, right? Like if you're positioning your extra television in a space where you already have a coax cable, you can just connect that and get your connection to your network that way, as long as your router connects MoCA as well.
Right. So real quick, we haven't talked about MoCA in a long time on the show. People
it's
might not know
technology.
What you mean.
Really good point. Okay. So MoCA is essentially, MoCA is multimedia over cable. It is a way of using your coax cable as a network connection. And many, many routers that you get from your provider have this available already. It's already there. It might not be lit up. You might have to turn it on in the settings, but it is there. And it's how all of my TiVos in my house connect to the network, because it's easy. It's one wire. You're already connecting your cable. Oh, by the way, it's also your network connection.
Right.
It's carrying both. Well, if you want to use a mini, then you had to use an Ethernet connection or a coax connector, even though you didn't need the coax to bring it cable. You just needed the coax to bring it the network. Now, that was a really long introduction to this new product. Now they're introducing essentially a USB Wi-Fi dongle that you can attach to the back of your TiVo Mini device, and it will connect to your TiVo either over your network, if you have an older TiVo, or if you have a Bolt, it will connect directly with Wi-Fi. So that's really cool.
It's really cool. Yeah, that's not interfering with your house Wi-Fi.
Right.
If your kids are all watching YouTube on their tablets and stuff and sucking up all of your Wi-Fi, it won't impact streaming to the TiVo Mini.
Yeah, exactly. Very cool stuff. I'm very, very excited about this. This is expected out for just $59. That's a great price. That's their manufacturer suggested price. They say they're going to be discounting that when it does roll out, which is expected before the end of quarter two.
Right. All right, there was one more announcement from TiVo,
yep.
And I was the one that was super excited about
this
one.
Of course, because it's sports.
Right. So Richard didn't care at all about this one, but I was super excited. So it's a new feature called Smart Extend. And what it does is it figures out when a sporting event actually completes and if the game goes into overtime or it runs longer than what your EPG, your guide data, says that it's supposed to end at, it keeps recording. So if you're watching a hockey game and it goes into double overtime, you're not going to miss the end of it. And you don't have to think about that when you're scheduling the recording. Because for me, I have to go in during the playoffs and tell every recording, add an extra 2 hours onto the end, because I have no idea when these things are going to end.
Right. If this is one of the sports that is supported by this, and you'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute, then when you go to record it, it's automatically going to suggest that the recording time should be based on the end of the game, not based on time.
Right, right. And if you care about post-game analysis and all that stuff, which you probably do if you care enough to use Smart Extend, you can also do end of game plus 15 minutes or whatever.
Or half an hour or whatever,
right,
you
exactly.
want to add to that. Right.
So I'm not going to get into every single league that this works with.
Why not? I wrote
bunches.
Them all down.
All of those details, again, are on the post on the website, and all of that is linked up in the show notes for this episode. But in the United States, it's all of the major sporting networks, even the ones that we wouldn't call major. So NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, MLS, and college football and men's college basketball. No sports there. I think this could be useful for NASCAR. Probably not as much the other auto racing series, but that's fine. Across the pond, like, this isn't just a U.S.-based feature, guys. All of those different soccer leagues and all that stuff, bunch of coverage there. PGA Tour, ATP Tennis, lots and lots and lots of sports that are covered here with this feature.
And the PGA Tour and tennis are supported globally,
like, right.
No matter where you are,
yep.
Which is really cool. And did you talk that this is all through the Thuze integration that they have?
Right, so because I'm not a TiVo user currently, I didn't really know about this, but in the TiVo interface, they've partnered with a company called Thuze to provide real-time excitement ratings, is what they call it. So when you're looking through the guide and you see all sorts of games that are coming up or maybe on right now, it puts a little rating on all of them.
Right.
0 to 100, 100 being like a game that you should not miss. And that gets updated in real time. Like, maybe they predict that the game is going to be a total snoozer and it only gets a 50.
Right.
But it gets into the fourth quarter of this basketball game or whatever, and it's super close and it's been a great game. That rating might go up to 70, 80, 90, and you should go and watch it then.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really clever. That's really clever.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the technology that all of this is based on.
So that stuff is in there now. The Smart Extend is going to be available sometime in quarter one. They were saying end of quarter one. That always makes me nervous.
Right.
But they're saying sometime in quarter one. Let's just say first half of the year.
Yeah. Because it's CES.
Because it's CES, we have to talk about TVs. We have to talk about TVs.
Right.
Now, we've seen some beautiful 8K TVs. We've known that we were going to see some beautiful 8K TVs. And I know Josh wants to talk about 8K TVs. I don't really want to talk about 8K TVs because I'm still telling you, don't buy them. Don't buy an 8K TV.
I want to talk about them, but I agree. Don't buy an 8K TV this year.
The first thing I want to talk about is the thing that caught my attention, and we already posted a video of their demo of this up on Instagram and in our YouTube channel. They have a demonstration of their new OLED TV R. It's going to be a part of the LG.
They being LG.
Sorry, LG. I thought I had mentioned that. I probably didn't. So I'm just so excited about this new LG TV. It is going to be a part of the LG Signature Series. Now, if you're not familiar with LG Signature Series, what that means is that it's expensive and premium. So they're not announcing pricing yet, but they are saying that this is a real product that is going to come out at the end of 2019. What am I talking about? I am talking about the rolling TV technology that we heard about and we saw some, I would say, prototype demos of in the past through videos and things like that. But I don't remember seeing anything that was ever this live and productized. So this is a 65-inch OLED that scrolls up and down out of something that's about twice the thickness of your average soundbar. Oh, and by the way, it's an Atmos soundbar. So it's an all-in-one TV console? No, because you would have to put it on a credenza of some sort, right? You need something to put it on. But it's an all-in-one TV that rolls out, and it doesn't look like a screen with the bent edges or anything like that. It looks perfectly flat. It is gorgeous. You have to see our video on YouTube.
It's really impressive. And I think it was last year or the year before, they were showing their unbelievably thin OLED that was also attached to a soundbar. And we hated it because the soundbar was so ugly.
Well, I don't...
That's not the case this time.
You're talking about the wallpaper. I don't hate the W. I just hate that it requires that stupid soundbar that's ugly.
Right, right.
Yeah.
This one, not ugly. This is a far more normal-looking soundbar.
It is a nondescript box.
Right. It'll fit in most living rooms, I think.
Yeah. Just amazing.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. Loved it.
All right, that's what caught my attention. What caught your attention, Josh?
LG had a lot of great things. And when it comes to OLEDs, I think they were still the best. But I was really kind of shocked by Sony. Sony had a 98-inch and an 85, if you're just not willing to go big, 8K LCD TVs. They were enormous, which is what 8K TVs should be.
Right.
Because a 55-inch 8K TV makes no sense.
Right.
Unless you're like less than arm's distance from it, you know, which no one's going to watch TV that way.
Right, right. You and I talked about how maybe that makes sense if you're using it for video production as a monitor or something like that at a smaller size. But certainly I would think like 75, 85 is kind of your sweet spot for that resolution, but it's still, I mean, it's all upscaling still. Smart upscaling.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it looks really good. It looks really good. And for being an LCD, it didn't even have issues with off-angle viewing like so many LCDs do.
Very true. Very true.
So I really, really liked that a lot. I thought their 4K OLEDs, which range from 55 to 77 inches, also looked amazing. Maybe Sony just has better demo content. There's no maybe about that. They definitely have the best demo content out of all of the players here. And they should. They have movie studios that they own.
Right.
But they looked really fantastic. So I was really impressed by Sony's Master Series TVs. I still, like I said, wouldn't necessarily recommend going out and getting one of these 8K TVs. We don't know how much they're going to cost anyway or when they're going to be available. They're just saying 2019. But and if you've got room for a 98-inch 8K TV, then I guess maybe.
I don't know. I say if you're looking at something like that, go big or go home, right? We were looking at, what was it, 250-inch or something like that, LCD, the crystal LCD wall.
Right.
I mean, it's only a mere 800K to a million for that sort of installation.
Right.
Just do it.
No problem.
Yeah, I was excited to see the Sony Crystal LCD here again at... Actually, Crystal LED, if I remember. Those are light-emitting diodes. Here at CES, they were using it for a game, which is just so cool to watch a game that large.
Right, right. Watching Gran Turismo on a PlayStation 4.
And this product is really designed for commercial installations. This is not something for residential, but it makes you think about the day that you could potentially have that full wall that is a television. Unlike the wall from Samsung, and we'll talk about Samsung in a minute, this isn't just a really, really big TV that we can't get anywhere near because it's a prototype. They let you get pretty close to this, and it's the whole wall. I mean, it's designed to go floor to ceiling, wall to wall. It's amazing.
Right. And you mentioned Samsung. It's similar technology to Samsung's The Wall TV. And last year, Samsung was here showing The Wall. You couldn't get within 15 feet of it at the time. Now, not only could you get close to it, it's an actual product. They're using those micro LEDs, and I don't remember what they call it, micro cells of some sort. I'm blanking on the name of that technology now, but it's the same sort of thing that Sony's doing to make actual TVs out of. And they've got a 75-inch version of it, I believe. It's an actual product that you're going to be able to buy. You're going to be able to buy it this year. Is it the best-looking TV that they have? No, it's not. Like, this technology still isn't the best. It's definitely not better than OLED. It's not even better than Samsung's own QLED TVs.
Right.
But it's eventually going to be. It has the ability to be better than OLED.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I just think at this time there's so many better options with Samsung. Samsung makes beautiful televisions. I personally prefer the LGs, but there are many, many really nice QLED sets from Samsung still available. Nothing really new that caught my attention except for some revs of some of their more unique artistic offerings. Now, we've talked about the Frame before. The Frame is a television in a box frame that could be more formally framed if you wanted to. That is a television, but it also has software on it to make it look like a painting or a photograph that you have framed and on your wall. Artwork. And this year, they've added QLED technology to it, so it looks even better. And when we say it looks even better, one of the problems with a product like this is that, like a digital picture frame, they always look like a screen.
Yeah, it looks like a tablet.
Right? You can tell that it's a screen and that it has some backlighting and stuff like that. Until they went into a motion demo mode on a wall of these things, Josh and I actually couldn't tell whether these were paintings or some of them were paintings as a point of comparison or whether they were all TVs. They were all TVs.
They weren't all TVs. There were a couple of paintings up there.
You missed the demo. That's the beauty of this. You missed the demo where they showed all of them switching to a motion demo.
It really was spectacular.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I saw it.
Yeah,
they're that nice looking.
Fantastic.
Cheap, though.
No, they're not. So they're not giving out pricing on the new models. These are the 2019 models that we saw that have the QLED technology in them. The 2018 models are already out there. Those are OLED, and those start at over $5,000.
Yeah. That's a lot of money for hanging a artwork looking like TV on your wall.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but I like to have more than just one painting on the wall.
Right.
So the other item that caught my attention was another artistic thing. You may remember the easel from, was it Samsung or was it Sony a couple years ago?
That was Samsung.
All right. So they've kind of evolved that and come out with some different similar type products. And one of them they came out with last year was called the Serif TV. It's a clever little name because if you look at the TV from the side, it looks like a capital I with serifs, with little like outcroppings on the top and bottom. And while that's artistic and looks kind of fun and retro, it also has an incredibly practical use where the bottom serif is actually a base that you can sit it on built into the frame. I love that.
Yeah, it was nice.
These have not been sold at general retail. These have been sold in studios and design studios and stuff like that. These will be available at general retail this year. I don't know what the pricing is going to be, but they also have been now up converted, if you will, or upgraded to so that all the models are now QLED.
Right, right. Before we leave TVs, I do want to go back real quick to that microcell technology that, that Samsung and Sony were both showing off, because I think, you know, we've spent the last couple of years talking about how it's not the year to buy an 8K TV, and it's still not the year to buy an 8K TV. When this microcell technology really advances, that will be the time to buy an 8K TV, because it's all about size with 8K. You need it to be enormous, and with that type of technology, we're going to be able to cover entire walls of our houses with these things. And then it makes sense to buy a TV like that in 8K.
Yep.
And I don't think we're that far off. That could be 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. Now, I'm going to do a painful transition here. If you're going to watch television that big in your home, you're going to want to do it with immersive audio, right?
Absolutely.
So you have three different products that you were interested in the audio space, and all of them are about immersive audio one way or another.
Yeah. I don't have a great way of figuring out the best order to go in here, so I'm just going to go in the order that I wrote them down.
Sure.
So we're going to start with headphones, which may not be where people would think we would go with this type of conversation.
Right.
But they're headphones from Dolby. They're called Dolby Dimension. It's the first ever consumer product from Dolby. They don't make products. They make technologies that you put inside of things, like receivers and stuff like that.
Right.
These are amazing, amazing headphones. They're Bluetooth active noise canceling headphones, but they were designed specifically for enjoying your media at home. So they know that when we're watching TV at home, we can't always use our full Atmos setups, and we aren't even always in front of the TV. Sometimes we're watching on a tablet or listening to music on a phone, and they've thought of all of that. So you can easily pair these to three different devices, actually eight through an app. But then there's three separate buttons on the headphones to easily switch between devices, so you don't have to do the pair and unpair hokey pokey every time you're switching devices.
So you're sitting down in front of your receiver, and you have your tablet in your lap and your phone's in your pocket, and they're fighting over who am I going to be paired with right now.
Right.
This solves that.
Right. They're also really, really comfortable. And they have to be, because a lot of times TV watching at home now means we're going to spend the whole weekend binging on some Netflix series.
Right. Right.
And if you're going to do that with headphones, they better be super comfortable headphones.
Or if you're on a long flight or something. I mean, I know a lot of times, even with my cushy pads on my headphones, certainly since I wear glasses a lot, the temples really bug me. So you want something that isn't going to be really heavy on your head.
Right.
On your
ears. But these might not be the best traveling headphones because they don't fold up.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because these were designed to be used at home. And foldy-uppy headphones, they're typically heavier, bulkier, have weird hinges and stuff. All of that makes them heavier and less comfortable.
I don't know. I've seen some people in the airport with some big headphones.
Right. These also have head tracking built in. And I was like, "What? Why do I need head tracking in headphones?" And
yeah, now let us put your mind at ease. This is not people tracking.
No, it's just your head.
It's tracking
when
where
your head falls
your head
off,
is.
It'll find your head. No, that's not at all what it is. Instead, if you're watching TV with these, when you watch TV with headphones on, and then you turn away or move to another room, it can actually be a little bit disorienting because you were watching video and your brain thinks that the sound is coming from that one area.
Right.
And now you're not looking there anymore. So they've actually built technology into this that, and I don't really know how this works, but it'll essentially lock on to the position of where the video was coming from. And then if you turn your head, it will adjust how the sound is coming out of the headphones so that, you know, if you turn 90 degrees to the right, the sound will primarily be coming through the left speaker.
Yeah, in theory, you're turning within the sound field. It's amazing.
Yeah, concept. It's really, amazing. Really cool. The other thing that makes a whole lot of sense when using these at home is the active noise cancellation will not just block out noise, because frankly, I don't really need to block out noise when I'm at home. I need it on airplanes and stuff like that. But I do need to be able to sometimes actually hear what's going on in my house while I'm using headphones to watch a movie.
Sure.
So this will block out noise, but it will also pipe in sound from around you. So if you're watching a movie and your baby starts crying, you could hear it using their Life Mix technology based on how much you tune the noise cancellation versus hearing the external sounds.
Okay.
Also, magnetic charging base. So all of this is really, really cool. Unfortunately, it's also really, really expensive. If you're watching us on YouTube right now and wondering why we look super confused,
someone just quit, came and took our sign down. I don't think we're getting kicked out. We have it for another hour and a half. But
right. That was weird. Okay, so that's the Dolby Dimension headphones. Again, a write-up for those on the website. Another product we got to see, but not actually hear, is the Monolith HTP116. This is an audio processor. It's not a receiver. It's an audio processor, home theater processor, that is 16 channels. That means you can do 9.1.6 with this processor. So that's 9 regular surround speakers, a subwoofer channel, and 6 Atmos or DTS:X, you know, height speakers in this one processor.
Well, or, you know, if you're someone like Rob H., that would probably instead be something more like 9.4.2.
Right.
More the subwoofer.
The more subs, the better, right? Right. So, like, this isn't the only product of its kind on the market, but it's the least expensive. Now, when I say that, it's still not cheap, okay? This thing is $4,000.
Oh, come on. I just spent $800K on a wall. I mean, I need good sound.
Right. If you're going to spend $1 million on your 20-foot TV, right, then what's $4,000 for your Atmos processor? $4,000 sounds like a lot, but it's $1,000 less expensive than the next cheapest option available, and that's the Emotiva RMC1 is a $5,000 processor, and the reviews of that device are saying it's not good. It's having a lot of problems with Dirac live processing and stuff. It's not great.
Now, in all fairness, nobody's publicly heard this processor yet.
Right. That's true. That's true.
But Monoprice has a pretty good history with stuff. I mean, they come out with all kinds of things that kind of challenge the industry in pricing, and have, you know, I think cables was probably the first thing that I used Monoprice for, because yeah, people were saying, why are you spending $30 on an HDMI cable? Or at the time it was RGB cables.
Right.
That would cost like $40 or $50. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Go to Monoprice.
Go to Monoprice and get a 6-foot HDMI cable for like $4. Right. Yeah. So that thing looks awesome. They've also, this is the Monolith line. It's important to know that when you're going to Monoprice for audio equipment, they have two different levels, basically. There's Monoprice speakers and there's Monolith speakers.
Right.
And the Monolith ones are the high-end speakers. Another new product that they announced in the Monolith series is some desktop speakers for your computer. They look great.
Oh, yeah.
They look fantastic.
Yeah.
We didn't get to hear them because when we went to their suite, they didn't have audio working on their computer at the time. But
demo woes.
I'm going to bet that they sound really nice. So those are coming out soon. Also, $200 for those. I'm really curious about those. I would like to replace my computer speakers with something nicer.
I am too. I think we should try to review those because I know that adding speakers to a computer can be a hassle, particularly since oftentimes for gaming rigs, they include that, you know, you would want the bass and have the subwoofer. These don't require a subwoofer, and they say they sound good enough that you really don't need to worry about it.
Yeah. He also said that the soundstage was really impressively wide for desktop speakers.
Right.
So yeah, I wanna check those out. Now the last one, it kind of sits in between the two products that we talked about there, and that is the Sennheiser Ambio soundbar. Sennheiser, right there. If you're watching the video, it's right over our shoulder. Right, you can't actually see it, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's right behind us. We were there a couple of hours ago to listen to this soundbar. It is a 5.1.4 Atmos soundbar. It's not the first of its kind, but it's getting a lot of press here at CES, so we had to make sure that we went and listened to this thing. What did you think?
So I thought it was good. I don't think it was as good as full actual Dolby speakers in the ceiling and everything for Atmos, but it was good. And I think the thing that impressed me the most was when they demonstrated it upscaling some high quality audio that was in stereo,
mm-hmm.
and what it could do to create a sound field with that stereo audio, so you felt like you were just like smack in the middle of this concert.
Yeah, it did. I was pretty impressed by the sound. The sound quality is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Super clear sound. And the surround aspect of it, you know, the five-channel surround aspect of it, I thought was really good.
Yeah.
It did a great job there.
It was the high channels.
Right, that's the hard part here. Right. Right.
Yeah.
When we talked about a similar product last year, what I said was, it just sounded like everything was above me. It wasn't quite like that here.
Right.
But instead, it was just the heights weren't as perceptible until the very end when they, of course, do the demo that everyone does, which is rain falling above you. Then it becomes super obvious. And that sounded good.
That's the classic Dolby Atmos demo that we've seen, I think, really since day one when Atmos came out.
Right.
And it is an impressive demo. It is what I play when I have friends over. They're like, oh, you have Atmos? Oh, you got to hear this.
Right. So other than the Atmos aspect and the really good sound quality of it, not a lot that stands out here. It's got three HDMI ports built into it. It's got EARC, which is important for audio return channel. Chromecast, Bluetooth, RCA, and optical, but no voice assistant stuff here. Like, really? It might be the only audio product that we've talked about at CES that doesn't have Amazon's voice assistant or Google assistant built in. It's kind of crazy. This thing is $2,500.
I really don't think that's that bad. I mean, I know you could get systems for less, but we were just talking about a $4,000 processor without any speakers
or amplifiers Right.
So this is all of that plus an HDMI switch with eARC and a Toslink audio input, and just like, you know, pretty much it is your AVR and it is the processor and it is your speakers. For $2,500 for Atmos like that, I mean, granted, I have an expensive receiver, but my receiver was more than half of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I don't know.
So, I wanted to come up with an actual comparison for this, so I went to the expert our friend Rob H. over at the AV Rant podcast. And I said, Rob, just shooting from the hip, what's an entry-level Atmos system going to cost me? Rob doesn't shoot from the hip. Rob gives you the straight story. It was a pretty long message. He basically gave me, like, here's the absolute bargain basement way that you could get in. And it was under $1,000. Like, you can do Atmos with a receiver and speakers for under $1,000. Rob's recommended entry level, and Rob's not ridiculous. Like, Rob would spend $1 million, maybe. But he's also reasonable here. Mm-hmm. Rob's entry level Atmos system would be about $1,600. That's still $900 less than this soundbar. And that's receiver and all the speakers.
Yes, that's true. I can't give any sort of point of comparison as to whether this would be better or worse than that. I don't know. What I can tell you is that this is way less hassle. And In some homes, setting up multi-point audio with speakers behind where you're listening and everything else just simply is not possible.
Right. Yeah, so these really high-end soundbars make tons of sense for renters or just, like you said, people who can't mount speakers
right. All
around their living room.
Right. Right.
But with this type of soundbar, you have to have the right kind of room. Your room has to be shaped more rectangularly. If you've got some weird setup or it's in the corner, this might not work as well.
Yeah, and that's where I am. But that's one of the reasons why I concluded that I had to do speakers in the ceiling.
Right.
Because I've tried a sound bar in a corner, and it's a mess. It's not good.
Right.
So, that's it for our audio news. What about gaming? Is there anything gaming that has caught your attention while we've been here on the floor?
I haven't gotten to see much of it. I did get to look at Razer's keyboard and mouse for the Xbox One. It looks super beefy. It looks cool. But I want to try it because using a keyboard and a mouse on a couch, that's a dicey situation. So I'm hoping to actually get to use that later today or tomorrow. I like that NVIDIA announced some lower series video cards in their new 2000 series, the RTX video cards. They've got a 2060 now that's like $350 price point for a video card. So that's good to see. The thing that maybe surprised me the most in the gaming space was when NVIDIA said that they would start certifying FreeSync monitors, which is essentially the technology that AMD uses for variable refresh rate, for G-Sync. So G-Sync monitors are more expensive than FreeSync monitors because it uses proprietary NVIDIA technology. But NVIDIA is still the top dog when it comes to video cards. So if you want a variable refresh rate monitor, you're going to have to go G-Sync previously because you almost definitely had an NVIDIA video card. So now you can still use your NVIDIA video card but get a cheaper AMD FreeSync. Well, I shouldn't say AMD. It's an open standard. But a FreeSync-based monitor and use it with G-Sync. So I think that's a pretty big deal.
And I understand all that, but the thing that confuses me is, like, why? Why would they do that? Like, what's in it for them?
Selling more NVIDIA video cards?
At $1,000 a piece?
Right.
I mean,
think
maybe?
That's probably it. Yeah. Yeah.
All
right. We saw some other interesting things. We saw a wireless power charging controller grip for the Nintendo Joy-Cons, which was neat. Like, it looks super weird, but it turns the Joy-Con into a controller that you can hold and not have your hands cramp up 5 seconds later. So that's good, and it charges completely wirelessly. Wireless power.
Yeah, this is based on the PowerCast technology that has been around for over a decade now, and we've seen it demonstrated with examples where there's like a little LED on a board, and you know, you hold it up in the air, and in certain locations it'll go on or it'll turn off. And they've demonstrated it in use in things like ornaments on a Christmas tree, and I forget what some of the other examples were. They had something where they were showing that retail could use these in packages, so that if you were buying, say, a six-pack of beer, and a particular beer manufacturer wanted to differentiate a special edition of their product, they could have little LEDs in it, and they would be lighted when you were looking at them in the refrigerator. What, you know, who knows? I mean, they're really kind of reaching, looking for practical applications, but that charger for the game control, that makes a ton of sense.
It makes a ton of sense. And for the record, we did ask them, why can't you do this for the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox?
Right,
and
right.
With the PlayStation, it's really tricky because it's an integrated battery that expects it to be charged via micro USB. With the Xbox One, I said, all right, but the Xbox One has a removable battery pack. Why couldn't you do it that way? And they said that part of the problem is the charging of their battery has to come slowly. And size constraints and all that stuff, like, it would just be difficult to do this in an Xbox controller. But with the way that the Nintendo Joy-Cons work, it makes sense. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Very cool. Anything else on the gaming side?
That's pretty much it.
We still have kind of a day and a half, a day kind and of. A sliver of some day to see what else is out there. So it's very likely that next week we'll be talking a little bit more about CES. There's still some stuff, and we'll do a wrap up of what we thought the basic trends were in media and gaming. But this has been a really enjoyable show so far. I don't think anything like crazy show stopping, but just a really enjoyable show, some cool evolving products.
Right.
I didn't expect anything to knock my socks off necessarily, but a nice evolution of technology.
Yeah. I think that's the perfect way to describe the show.
And I think that wraps this episode.
It does.
Not as long as we had feared.
No. Feared is the good choice of words.
Well, I mean, because we're looking through the notes and we're thinking we're going to be talking for hours.
Right. I'm sure the listeners appreciate that. What I appreciate is our listeners. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for checking out Entertainment 2.0 and all of our CES 2019 coverage over at thedigitalmediazone.com. Even if you're listening to this a couple days later, chances are you missed some of the news because there's so much stuff. If you're interested in the smart home stuff, Richard's been writing a bunch of smart home stuff, and you'll have an episode of Home On coming out soon too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We will be doing some floor interviews that we took while we were here at the show. I still have a couple more to do. And, you know, I think there's been a couple interesting products that I really want to highlight. One in particular that I'm just going to give a little sneak on. Ring came out with a line of security lighting products that I think is a big, big deal. So I'm looking forward to diving more into those in the future. And then, of course, the episode that is out right now of Home On is the kind of eve of CES episode that I do every year. And this time it was with Andrew Gephardt, and we had a lot of fun. You know, I'm all excited about smart home tech, and he reports on smart home tech, but he seemed to be more excited about the possibility of finding cool robots here. And we have seen a lot of cool robots.
Yeah, a lot. All right, well, if you want to find us online of other than, you know, just thedigitalmediazone.com, we're on Twitter also. We've been tweeting a lot from the show floor.
And Instagram.
I know, you're all about Instagram. I haven't figured that out yet. But the website is at DigiMediaZone. I'm at Josh Pollard, and Richard is at Richard Gunther. What are we on Instagram? How do people find us on Instagram?
DigiMediaZone.
Awesome. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/thedmz. And I think that's going to do it for this episode. So thanks for listening. This has been episode 472. He's Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.